Come to order, and this morning we're going to start public hearing on House Bill 5015. Prior to that, the chair is going to make an announcement that the Smart Jitney bill that was sent out yesterday, Senate Bill 483, is apparently going to come back to this committee. The reason is we sent it forth. The LFO recommendation was to use lottery funds. The co-chairs have now indicated that they want to use some other type of funding and are asking us to consider amending the bill, changing the funding source. And the reason is that we're pushing up against the appropriation expenditure limitation that we are prohibited by law from going above a certain level. So just to make the members aware that that bill will be coming back to our subcommittee, we'll probably have to do some work on it, but Senator Q-Tub apparently has agreed to amend the bill and change the source of funding. As soon as I have the source identified, I'll be glad to share it with the committee members, but they want the lottery money as much as possible to go to economic development for projects and community stabilization and so forth. So as soon as we hear something, I'll let the committee members know. And then yesterday, Senator Yee asked a question regarding a budget for the Smart Jitney, and I indicated that her question was inappropriate because the person she was asking it to was potentially one of the providers rather than the department. And Senator Yee took exception to my tone of inappropriate, and I would apologize to Senator Yee for any misunderstandings. It was not my intention to certainly offend you, and I would certainly apologize and correct the mistake.
I appreciate that, because I thought asking for information about the budget is very appropriate.
It is always appropriate, and the problem was I felt you were asking the wrong person, and we can address that by having the staff come back up. Senator Q-Tub, I was just indicating that we're going to be bringing Senate Bill 483. I've been subjected to the proverbial woodshed, and still have the stripes on my back from the abuse and the bill coming back to our committee for further consideration. No. Don't feel that way, Marie. Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand the information I asked for is available this morning. He gave it to me in my hands.
Okay.
So I'm glad about the promptness of the information.
Great. Thank you, Senator Yee. This morning at public hearing on the House Bill 5015, the Economic Development Department, and Bill Scott and Kelly Freeze, would you like to both come up? And Ms. Lamont, do you have some opening comments you'd like to make?
I do. As I indicated in the memo that I passed out to you, this agency was directed by the 1997 legislature to restructure how it delivers services. You've had a report from the commission and the work group. As we proceed through their budget, the things that we will need to keep in mind is the direction that was established by the 1997 legislature and the work group, including the responsibility of the Economic Development Commission for distributing funds from the Community Development Fund based on priorities and outcomes, consolidation of resources into that Community Development Fund instead of the previous line item funding that had occurred, and emphasis on local decision-making and priorities that are supported by the department through the Community Solutions team and their regional team. Also continuing the focus on rural and distressed communities that were established by the last legislature and reaffirmed this time in Senate Bill 1128. And then considering what is adequate funding to support existing programs, including debt service and operational support, adequate funding for infrastructure and community development programs, and debt service and the lottery-backed bond proceeds issue, which we will hear in another bill. I've distributed to you a copy of the International Trade Commission report to the Emergency Board that the International Trade Commission was directed to report on. The agency had no performance audits, and there were no findings in their financial audits. And I think that concludes my summary, and Mr. Scott can start with his overview.
Okay. Are there any questions of the staff?
I do not see the International Trade Division report.
It's attached in that memo.
Oh. Okay, didn't we cut that? Didn't we cut that from the budget?
Are there further questions of staff?
The first page is my, the very first page is my cover memo, and then the second page is the report. I also attached a copy of the budget report from 1997 so that the committee would have an opportunity to review what the last legislation did.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from staff? Mr. Scott, welcome to the committee. Do you want to go first or Mr. Fries? And I would like to ask Mr. Scott, as you'll recall, Senator Timms and Senator Yee and myself met with you yesterday, and Senator Timms has asked me as chair of the subcommittee to try to get as much information to respond to Senator Yee's questions as possible. And try to do it in the most timely manner. And I know that you're burdened down with a lot of activities now, but if your staff or whoever can put together the responses to the questions that Senator Yee has asked for on investments, community investments, and how they're being utilized, we would greatly appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Yee,
while you're on the subject, I asked for information that's required by the statute about how successful each program is. We want a report on each program about how many jobs are created, what is the return on investment, what kind of methodology do you use to measure performance of each program, and set up guidelines by those methodologies to evaluate future investment. And this is a $320 million budget, and we are looking at $120 million increase. And your letter says the information will be given to us by June 11th. And I think that the work session is tentatively scheduled around the 9th and 10th, and the information given to us by 11th really is not timely. So I would like to know, is it possible to have the information by the beginning, by June 1st, instead of June 11th? After all this information is supposed to be listed in the biennial report required by statute, and it's not here. So I really would appreciate getting those information. So would the committee like to use those information maybe by the 1st of June, so that we can use that information to measure the success of the program and make decisions about which program should increase in funding and which one not so much. That's my request.
Ms. Lamont, did you want to make a comment?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, we are not real clear at this point exactly when work session will occur on this budget. There are a couple of other issues that need to be dealt with, specifically the lottery-backed bond authorization bill. but the tentative plan is to have hearings through approximately the 10th of June. So I would hope that the earliest possible date that we could get this information in front of the committee would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. And
I will pass out the schedule right now.
All right.
About June 1st, so we can have some information.
What I think we've done is let Mr. Scott know that we'd like to have it as quickly as possible, but we don't want to wait till the 11th hour and the 59th minute and the 45th second before we get the information going to work there.
Right.
So I think we've set a time frame that he can be flexible with, that he can abide by without setting a specific date.
Mm-hmm. But still allow us some time
yes.
to make good judgment.
We'd like to have it yes. so we can thoroughly review the responses.
Yes, the information.
Okay.
Make good judgment.
Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Scott, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill Scott. I'm the director of the Oregon Economic Development Department. Maybe I, since we've gotten the subject, I'd just refer you to the schedule. Now, we had been told that there were 8 days for public hearings, so I was assuming work session would be after that. This is the way we have it scheduled at this point. I think we can compress if you're willing to allow us to move ahead. In terms of Senator Yee's specific questions, I think we've provided complete information. What we're planning to do that we haven't done is that Senator Yee has pointed out that the statutory requirement for the biennial report of the Economic Development Commission requires more specific information by program than in fact was included in the published version of that. That information is available. What we're trying to reorganize it into a fairly simple to read, program by program format that will take a fair amount of work to do it, and it's going to be a number of days work for our staff. We will respond to your request, and I don't believe it's possible for us to get it done by the first, but we'll get it done at the earliest moment and try to make sure you at least have it for a few days before you get to work session.
Representative Schrader.
Just a real quick comment on the schedule. It looks like we're going to spend all day on performance overview with Mr. Tryons and then more time the next day. If we need time to look at the budgets early, compress those. I mean, it depends on the will of the interest of the committee, but I'd be interested in compressing that way down to maybe half a day on the performance overview and progress board and allow more time for the discussion at Senator Yee and others.
I'm sure of the session plan, we can compress anything or expand it.
That's what I wanted to hear.
And however the spirit moves, if it's on the notification list 36 hours in advance, we can do anything and we can make adjustments. Representative Patrick.
Chair, I just wondered, in light of the proposed schedule, we have people that are coming. I have some people who contacted me from Southern Oregon who want to come. What's the appropriate day to tell them that we're going to have hearings open to the public to come before the committee rather than just have the department present? Because it's not clear to me from this list.
This Lamont is there at a public... Excuse me, public testimony date.
This is the recommendation of the agency. The committee can, at its will, identify a day that it will choose to have a public hearing, and maybe it would be appropriate to do that right now, and that way the agency then can restructure their presentation plan around that. because I know Senator Yee had concerns about wanting people to come in and testify regarding the other areas of interview as well.
Yes.
So, you know, perhaps we might want to designate a day right now and then make it available to people who needed to testify or wanted to testify. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Yee,
I would agree with Representative Schrader in the overview by I think that could probably be collapsed into half a session's testimony period, and then possibly that leaves us some time to be able to have public testimony. But because we have a 36-hour notice here, if we have to decide fairly soon about this progress board presentation on.
Senator Cusub, it's all part of this agency's budget.
Okay.
So as long as this agency is scheduled,
we would
you don't have
specific.
A notice.
Okay.
You don't have a notice problem.
I would certainly be willing to have a public testimony today. I think one of the things you do have to be careful of is because this is a volatile issue with a lot of legislators, you're going to have 90 legislators in here indicating what their own individual pork barrel project is, and then
good legislation.
I don't mean a pork barrel to be offensive to anyone, but it happens, and we just don't need it. We're going to get tied up doing 3 days of public testimony on stuff that we probably don't have the wherewithal to finance, even if we wanted to, unless they create a new lottery game that generates new revenue. But the only thing I would point out to members is that we can have public testimony, but I'd rather restrain it to people outside this building coming in and testifying publicly rather than people within this building testifying. So, Representative, if you wouldn't mind an amendment to your suggestion, I would recommend that these be community leaders or community response teams or whatever else, that we try to refrain from having legislators come in.
The general public.
Yeah, the general public.
The real
people.
The civilians. Okay.
Can we have a blood test or something?
That sounds like a DA to me.
See if it's American blood. Let me try a suggestion here. Tuesday combine the performance overview and progress board piece. Wednesday, I'm talking about the second, combined progress board international and art. Make Thursday the public testimony day, which will be June 3rd, and then Friday do the tourism piece, if we have time, or move it into, you know, the following week if necessary.
Is that acceptable?
I think we can tell Senator Yee when she comes back.
I think tourism, it would be really good getting our own.
We'll allow it.
I was going to say is I think tourism is an important part of this department, and I wouldn't want to leave it for Friday.
My intention is that the short chain tourism is that it's a less complex program, basically, than others. But Mr. Scott is disagreeing with me.
Mr. Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I don't. We're real. Do whatever the committee wants. Because of the kind of repeated postponements here, there are a number of people who have been talking to us about wanting to come in, and we've tried to schedule this around some outside people's schedules, particularly the international arts and tourism, but really most of these that we can adjust and do, you know, if they can't come, they can't come. I guess I would suggest, first of all, I wanted to let you know the performance overview is mostly a review of the department's performance measures, and we have scheduled extra time because of our having conversations with Senator Yee about how interested she was in that subject, I'm not sure she isn't going to prefer to see what, you know, in the format she's asked for, which we won't have by Tuesday, but we understand that Jeff Tryon did an overview before the transportation was trying to get it, sort of had our performance measures fit into an overall scheme of things. So we were, most of it, Sam Serkin, who's our deputy director, kind of telling you about what our system is, what the measures tell us, and kind of where we're going from here in developing it. I think we could combine it with the progress board, probably presentation in the same day, and free up time Wednesday for public partners. The other day I would really suggest would be the 9th. It would be probably the easiest for us to manage if you wanted to do maybe half of the 2nd and half of the 9th for miscellaneous public testimony.
I know Bill Williams, president of Berkeley Corporation, is difficult person to schedule for anything, so I want to try to accommodate as much as possible because he travels nationally and internationally all the time, and it would be very difficult to say a month out.
Mr. Chairman, the 2nd is the only day of all these days that he can be here, and
so
I just put it on his schedule.
My suggestion was purely based on the varying degrees of complexity in looking at these programs. So I think that your suggestion is a good one, and I think it's good for the committee to perhaps not have to have a full day of public testimony, because that can get a bit draining too. So
can you review what the revised plan might be?
Yeah, the revised plan would be that on Tuesday we would do the performance overview and the progress board. That's on the 1st. On Wednesday we would do the international division, which is on the 2nd, and then the second half of that meeting would be public testimony.
I think we might reverse those because of Bill's schedule again.
Okay.
But
again, I'm just whatever.
Okay, we can get here quite by 8 o'clock.
That's right. Robin,
would that be a good day to hear my trade office?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, because the co-chair said that would be a good day. If it's a good day for the committee.
Okay, mm-hmm. That would be an excellent day.
Okay,
8:30. Thank you. Senator Yee, are you also talking about having a hearing on your bills?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I don't know about the bills. This is public testimony dealing with the trade office or any other project through OEDB.
Right. Well, I thought you said to me that would be a good day to hear the bills. And I asked the co-chair.
Let me run it by Senator Timms again and see if it's okay with him. But we can't confuse the substantive bill with the budget because it's a budget item that we're going to be hearing that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand your bill creates the office, but we'll try to be as accommodating as possible.
Right. So, 8 to 8:30, hear the bill and work session, and then hear the budget?
Right. Mr. Chair, I think we should go through the budgets first. We've always done the bill stuff after we've gone through the budgets. I think that's the first day of this format we've used.
And that will become part of the prioritization of the subcommittee on whether they choose to proceed with your senator.
Sure.
Just a moment.
Because previously when I talked to you, you say a good day to hear the bills will be when we hear the international trade budget. That's why I requested the co-chair, and they said it's fine. So
let's try to work on that this morning with the co-chair and see if we can work out the details.
Yeah, tentatively they say June 2nd.
June 2nd,
8:30 is fine.
Okay, mm-hmm. Senator Kuta.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to go back just for a moment for Tuesday in the performance overview and the progress board. Because what I hear Bill Stott saying is it's kind of a combination of having the performance view based upon the progress board benchmarks and so forth. And actually, I don't know how the rest of the committee feels, but it is totally irrelevant. And I think that we would be better served looking at the kind of information that we've asked and that you have said would be ready by June 11th, and we've asked for it to be ready sooner than that so we can actually look at real numbers, real projects, real things. I just don't think that the progress board benchmarks mean a lot in reality. And so I would rather not use this entire day for that. Maybe Mr. Turkin has something to say about some other news. Whoever is saying this, whether it's male or female, you know, that maybe can be combined on the other day when we actually look at the projects, the success of those projects, the return on investment and those things, rather than these benchmarks, and then that would leave this day for something else. But I would, you know, go along with what the other committee members meant, but that's my
Let us try to do this on the first half of the second, Wednesday the 2nd, June 2nd, we will do the one half of the committee time will be spent on public testimony, and the remaining will be spent on international division. On Wednesday, June 9th, it will again be public testimony. And then do you want to deal with department projects the rest of the remaining time?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure. The projects that are listed here. These are basically what these were was we just picked a few kind of case studies that show you how we actually deliver the services that we've been describing to you up till then, or the funding, because a lot of times you're packaging a bunch of things, and this is really just to tell some stories about how this stuff actually works, because I think it's hard to get that in the abstract. So that was what we were planning to do.
Members of the committee, rather than take the committee's time with further discussion of scheduling, could I work with the agency and come back with a recommendation to the committee?
Okay. Representative Patrick?
And I would also again try to then establish a schedule for the China office and the substance bill at the same time.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. I would agree with Senator Chisa. I mean, we've had some progress we've had days of progress. Probably this is our, this will be like the fourth or fifth. I've had progress for it before the committee. I'm like, I don't need to hear from the progress board. You might want to.
I agree. That's all.
Okay.
Do you need to hear from her first?
That's fine and well. But don't ask me later on. We haven't heard from the progress. I'm glad to cut the umbilical cord, but I want to make sure nobody comes back to ask the question later. All right, Mr. Scott, welcome to the committee. We'll try to start the presentation.
Thank you, sir. Could I just, however, ask one clarification? I don't want to get back into this. Where we say progress board, actually, you know, the budget of the progress board is part of our department. At some point, we need to just tell you what's in there.
Yeah, the budget.
Okay, all right.
But I'll put down on that for you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I guess I would like to begin by showing you that you have a notebook in front of you that is titled Overview of the Economic Development Department. This is the materials we've prepared and the way we'll walk through our presentation, and so that's where our handouts, if you will, are included in this notebook. As the chair said, or as Robin said, if you'll remember, I think 2 weeks ago today, we had about an hour of testimony that was intended to be the kickoff of our budget hearings, and that was the report back from the interim work group and the Economic Development Commission on the work that has been done in the interim that had been required by the budget note from the last legislative session. The documentation for that is what's behind your first tab, which is the biennial report of the Economic Development Commission and the final report of the interim work group. And the I won't try to review right now what all the content of that is, although maybe I'll summarize it at the end of my presentation today, but I wanted to remind you that essentially all of the legislation brought forward by the department this session and essentially all of the significant program option packages or change issues in our budget have grown out of that interim work group process that was established by the last legislature, and that's what's in those documents. And the budget note actually required the Economic Development Commission to kind of report back on what it was going to do with the report of the interim work group, and that information is in the biennial report at page 7. So that's and we have another copy of that at the end of my presentation today in your notebook. But that's essentially what you have in that section. Behind the next tab, which is really where I'm going to begin today, I want to briefly review the history and structure and how we are organized to do business and kind of what we do in economic development in Oregon. And then the second and probably major part of my presentation today will be overviewing what's in the budget and what the architecture of the budget is and the changes in the budget. So if you go to the second tab and perhaps look at the first. Page 1 behind the second green tab is a, I'm not going to walk through every bullet on here, but this is just a reference really for you that tells you kind of when the various functions of the Economic Development Department were acquired and when some of these programs and functions started and where we came from. And I guess if I could highlight a few issues, I guess I'd say the biggest thing would be that we're probably maybe in the middle of or getting toward the end of a major shift and redirection of what economic development means in Oregon. And as you know, you've even passed a bill that changes the name of the department to the Department of Economic and Community Development, so that we're undergoing, this budget reflects, I think, a major sea change in direction and policy for the department that I think has been driven by at least the last three legislative sessions. Yeah, but I think we're kind of through that transition now, as this represents the coming out the other end of it. And what that's about fundamentally is, and the kind of shaded areas on this just remind us what was going on in the Oregon economy, and really our mission from the time Oregon got into the economic development business in the 50s until the mid-90s was really to get something going besides forest products in Oregon. In the 50s, one in five jobs was in a mill or a logging operation. In the 70s, it was one in 10 jobs. Today, it's about one in 25 jobs in the state, and we are a diversified economy as far as the general fund is concerned and as far as our population centers in urban areas are concerned.
So, do you have an estimate on what the income level has been since the product jobs have been phased out? What types of jobs are being replaced and diversified? What the average potential income or actual income is?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have that information. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I think I can describe the pattern over that period is that, in general, income in the state historically was at or a little above on average the national average, and we had a much smaller gap between urban and rural incomes than the national average, although we had much higher unemployment and volatility in the rural areas than either the urban areas or the national average. Where we are today is that after a dramatic decline in the 80s, urban incomes have now recovered to where they're above the national average. Urban incomes have not recovered. The gap between urban and rural is still smaller than it is elsewhere in the country, but much greater than it used to be. And on the whole, our average income statewide have not recovered to the relationship to the rest of the country that they used to enjoy. So I would say, by and large, the industries, the professional service and manufacturing industries that we've diversified into pay better than forest products, but a lot of our new jobs have also come in other service industries that that don't pay better.
Is GEFTA and the job training stuff, is that in your house?
Mr. Chairman, no, it isn't.
If
you'll look at this, the job training partnership was transferred into our department in 1987 and out in 1997. And we no longer have any, we have a role in organizing some workforce partnerships, but we no longer administer those programs.
What I was trying to perhaps ask and didn't know how quite phrase it is, how much have we invested in economic development to create this level of jobs that's been used to bring online to place that unemployed mill worker, timber worker? The reason I ask is that a lot of these individuals are individuals without technical skills. They work in the sawmill from high school on, their middle 50s. They don't possess marketable skills, and economically they're finding jobs, but the jobs that they appear to be drawn to are service type jobs. And do you have any tracking system on any of that that shows what the net effect is? You understand where I'm coming from?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think I do. And the answer is that I think pretty good data are available. Essentially, the Employment Department is the one that keeps them as to the shifts in occupation and wage levels and industrial categories of Oregon's employment and the changing profile of that, both on a statewide and a regional basis. And I would say that your observation that many of the people laid off in the forest products industries don't necessarily have the skills for the high-wage jobs that are being created today is an accurate observation, that the big, fast-growth high-wage jobs is professional services, managers and administrators, engineers, and high-tech manufacturing and software. And some of our, particularly in Central and Southern Oregon, those occupations are growing rapidly, and in fact incomes on the average are rising, but it's not the same people, with the high incomes as it used to be. We found that, in fact, the mill workers tend to have good skills in service industries, such as, the customer support service center, some of those kind of things that require a good basic education. And they've successfully made those transitions, and we have many former mill workers who are now, when you call the 800 number, when your Windows doesn't work, the person on the other end may well be a dislocated mill worker in Klamath Falls or northeastern Oregon or somewhere, but the those jobs don't pay anything like the mill jobs pay. I guess I would say the last point I'd want to make maybe at this stage in the presentation is that a lot of the work of the 1990s and the change in our organization in the 1990s has been trying to integrate a whole lot of separate programs that at one time operated very independently. And when I first came to the department, it was, you know, a collection of 20 or 25 program managers. We had no common data. Did not have common strategies and so on. And today, it's an integrated department. Essentially, most people in it work with a lot of different program tools and are not separated by program units. So that's been, I think, the big change in the way the department does business. The other big change is that prior to the early 80s and the lottery, we were virtually entirely a service organization doing industrial location, corporate troubleshooting, trade promotion, technical services support districts. Those functions we still do. And I think the bottom line is that we do them with less people and less money on an inflation-adjusted basis than we did before the change came. But beginning in the early 80s, we became a major financing agency doing both business financing and then subsequently our big growth area in the last 10 years has been financing community infrastructure and facilities. Hence the name change and all the growth in budget and all the growth in personnel in our agency has been in those areas. In fact, if you look at the next page, you'll see that our big growth really came in the 87 through 93 period. Our agency has been consolidating and shrinking really in terms of FTE or personnel is page 2 behind the second green tab since essentially 1993. A lot of the growth that you'll see there is in non-limited funds and federal funds. Or I think the growth in the 80s was when the lottery came in. Since the early 90s, essentially all the growth has been in non-limited funds, which is basically bonding, revenue bonds we issue by pooling local projects. And the other area of growth has been in federal funds and that's mainly the Community Development Block Grant from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. So those have been our big area has been coordinating and finding new ways to leverage lottery money to finance community infrastructure and community facilities. And that's really the big thing we do with money there, and that's kind of the history of the agency. Hey,
on the lottery carryover that you have on this graph, and it has an adjustment figure of $322 million. Is part of this the reflection that the legislature made last session when they cut $15 million from your budget? Part of it.
I guess I would say that the $322 million is the total. The shrinking of the carryover is due to two things. One is simply that because of the reduced funding from the legislature, I guess I'd say we have fewer committed projects that are going to hold over the end of the biennium than we used to. There's also, however, been really an accounting change that makes up a lot of that. That really has moved some stuff from that current category into the other funds category.
Okay, so it's really not any other shortage that was created that other than the legislature cut back your ability, you still have the demand for the project.
That's correct. Demand is way up, and we have a lot of documentation of that we'll show you. I would say we have more or less maintained the stream of infrastructure funding. The big cut has been taken in regional strategies.
Is this the lottery-backed bond, is this the total value of the bond, or does this reflect the debt service?
No, this is a limitation to spend the proceeds or to invest the proceeds of bonds to be issued.
Okay.
And we've obviously got more detail for you in a minute, but this just gives you an overall feel for what's there. Then I wanted to show you just kind of what's in the department and how we're now organized, which is quite different. The Oregon Progress Board, the Oregon Arts Commission, and the Oregon Tourism Commission are what we think of as autonomous or semi-autonomous agencies. They each have a board that's appointed by the governor. Their directors and staff are hired and fired by their boards, not by me. However, we provide all their administrative services and financial controls, so we're responsible for them spending their money right, and we do coordinate with them a good deal on programmatic and policy things, but that's why they're portrayed with this dotted line kind of arrangement, and that's why that setup. You won't find the film and video office on here. The film and video office was once part of the department. It's now essentially an independent state agency. Its FTE don't appear in our budget. It's essentially a line item in our budget that passes through the film and video office, and we do not provide any services to them, nor do we really monitor their performance. So then if you look at the rest of the department, there are essentially, the way we're organized now is we're divided into 11 teams, and the four teams on the left are essentially kind of central teams. The international group is housed in Portland with offices in Tokyo, Seoul, and Taipei. They provide services to their customers directly, but also provide a lot of support and coordination with our regional teams, which I'll mention in a minute. The business and industry services team is the central part of our function that assists corporations with location, with regulatory troubleshooting, with workforce problems, and does advocacy for business issues. And they also deliver a lot of what they do through the regional teams. The finance team has all the money. So essentially the finance team, everything you'll find in the Community Development Fund, which is all our grant and loan programs, their budgets are managed by the finance team. And so when we have these regional teams that go out and help communities develop projects that are then to be financed, then they basically come to the bank, which is the finance team, to figure out how to fund it. The program development team is the central group that does training, writes rules, helps develop and change the programs that we do. Then the next five units here are the guts, I guess I would say, of our new organization. And they are basically five regionally based teams. We no longer have a separate group for each program, so that we don't have a group that does regional strategies and a group that does community development block grant and a group that does infrastructure financing. What we have is a team that identifies with Central Oregon, what they call Central Corridor, and I think two pages back there's a map that just kind of shows you what those the territory they cover. That is, that the Central Corridor team consists of the regional development officers that are actually in the field in that region, and then a team in Salem that supports them and helps them provide their services to their community. So their job is to figure out what their communities need, work with them to, I guess, reconcile it with state objectives and our programs, and to find a way to help the communities in that region. And that's a major shift in the way we do business, and it reflects our change from being primarily an agency trying to solve a statewide diversification problem to where today we're mainly an agency helping communities solve their diversification problems, or whatever they have identified as their economic or community development challenges. So now we're mainly an agency helping local communities, and our new organization kind of reflects that. So we're organized around groups of communities and their needs. Finally, the two positions on the right, or the two teams on the right end, the policy communications group is a consolidation of what was once three different functions in the department. They do marketing services for all our programs, so there's brochures, there's reports, there's anything like that. They do marketing services. They do research, and there's a good deal of research and evaluation work, and the kind of information the center used in asking for this central group is the one that pulls that research together and maintains the database of how many jobs created and all of that kind of thing. They also do analysis on when we're negotiating incentives with a company to try to figure out what the cost benefit of that is. Then the third function that group has is public information, and just making sure that we do deal with the press quite a bit in our agency, and they handle that. Finally, the central services team is our fiscal budget information services, and the personnel and facilities management functions are there. So that's basically the setup of the organization.
Mr. Chairman, is it possible for you to indicate how many people are in each division, so we have an idea how many people are in administration, how many people are in field service?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, yes, there's a version of this same chart that's back where we'll deal with the budget that supports this. That is pretty far down and sort of over to the left. There's a tab that says Program Services in the book. One of the green tabs. And behind that, at page 4, is a version of the same chart that has the FTE for each unit. Page 3, I'm sorry. Mine's at page 4. This is interesting. It's 3 or 4 behind the tab.
Which tab?
Program Services. It's kind of over to the left and near the back. Like on the right?
Yes,
I'm sorry. Okay, I had this overnight and they kind of redid the notebook. So, sorry, it's over toward the right. Sorry, they aren't all the same.
Is this for the next biennium?
The dotted lines show the program option packages. So what's in the solid is the way it is right now, and then the dotted line is the positions that would be added by the governor's recommended budget.
And follow up.
Yes, please.
And the policy and communications team do the research work in reporting the data of each program and return on investment. That's the 7 FTE.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, yes, that's one of the things they're responsible for coordinating. Obviously, there are other people that have to contribute to that, but they're responsible for coordinating that work.
Okay?
Go ahead and continue, please.
Okay, the next page, which says page 4 in my book, just says affiliated boards and commissions, and this was just because we've had different questions. There are actually, besides the Economic Development Commission itself, there are 6 statutory bodies that have policy responsibility in the agency. The first 4 are the ones that are semi-autonomous that I just reviewed. Then we also have an International Trade Commission, which is responsible for kind of the policy direction of the International Division, and the Ports Advisory Council, which is responsible for advising the Commission and the Department on how we provide services to port districts. So I just wanted to know those, and you will hear from all 6 of these bodies at least briefly during the course of our presentation. I guess the map is the next page, page 5. I guess the thing I didn't perhaps make clear is that we have 12 field officers around the state called regional development officers, and if you there are 2 or 3 of them within each of these 5 units, and there is a kind of a not quite as dark line that may be hard to see, but it shows what their regional assignments are. Those people actually live and are full-time working in the field. The other members of the team are mostly in Salem, although the Northwest team is located in our Portland office, and a few of the other members of the team are also located in the field. So that's kind of how our department is dispersed in terms of its services. So as an example, if you look at the Eastern team's area, there are 2 regional development officers, 1 for Grant, Harney, and Malheur County. That individual is stationed in John Day. And then there's 1 for Morrow, Umatilla, Union, Malala, Baker County. She's stationed in McGrand. And so there's 2 members that are out there of that team, and then I think there are 3 or 4 in Salem who support them.
Other questions?
Okay, the next page is just...
Mr. Chairman, I think your correspondence to me, you indicated you have 88 people in Salem, 17 people in Portland, and about 10 elsewhere in Oregon. Seems to me a large percentage of your people are in Salem.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, the I was just giving the example of the Eastern Regional Team, and of the members of that team, 3 or 4 of them are stationed in Salem, and 2 are stationed in Eastern Oregon. So that's just one part of the department.
But out of your entire department, you have about 105 people in Salem and Portland, and only about 10 around the state. That's not very many people out there delivering direct services, is it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, most of our people deliver direct services. As you know, some of them are actually in Tokyo and Taipei.
I didn't include your
as well. We've tried to strike a balance of where the work really needs to be done. I think we have significantly more presence in the field or closer to the field than we used to, and what the trend is in the department right now, as part of our reorganization, I committed to the people that we wouldn't force anyone to move, and that's gone real well. However, we have a number of people who are volunteering to move, and so while we for instance, the 88 people in Salem, there are a couple of those who actually, while their formal job location is in Salem, they're spending virtually full time. I mean, one that actually lives in Central Oregon, she spends about a day and a half or 2 days a week in Salem, but she's the manager of that Central Oregon team, and I think we have an increasing number of people doing that. And of the people in Salem or in Portland, many of them spend a lot of their time actually in the field. On any given day, I would say a lot of those people are out around the state. But we certainly believe that over time we will continue the trend of moving more people to the field.
At the present time, only about 10 people are involved in offices outside of Salem in Oregon. Salem and Portland.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, that's correct. Of course, a great many of the communities and residents of Oregon live, maybe two-thirds live close to Salem and Portland, so a lot of our demand for service actually is in those locations. But I would think over time I would expect a greater number of our people to be stationed elsewhere in Oregon.
I just want to say,
Mr.
Chairman, that we have a lot of distressed area outside of the metropolitan area, in the rural areas, where there are high unemployment, and I think more services should be and programs should be provided to those distressed area in the rural areas.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Scott, if you want to continue, please.
The next page is just for your reference to let you know the names and numbers to call. If you're looking for information, obviously you can always call me or Karen Kraft, our central services manager and fiscal manager, for any questions about the budget. Now I want to kind of overview kind of actually how our budget is built and what are the different sections of it. And I thought the best way to start was with a pie chart that shows you the, we'll show it to you two different ways. First is by what's called program in the budget, which is the line items that you're actually asked to do as part of your allocation bill that's in front of you, is the seven units that are shown in the pie chart on page one. By far the largest and I think most important is the Community Development Fund, which is about 80% of the total budget. That includes a lot of different sources of money, but it's $260 million. And essentially, all of our grant and loan money, everything that is special payments in our department, with the exception of a little bit in tourism and arts, is in this Community Development Fund. So that's where, most of the things that people are concerned about getting financed is in that area. We've allocated the most time to the Community Development Fund. We had originally hoped to start with it, but because of the way the people's schedules worked out, we're going to have to take it after some of these smaller items. Program services is the category that essentially pays for our staff and offices. And so those aren't broken out by program. They're in a single line item. And essentially that pays for all our staff except for the people that are in arts and tourism and progress board. All the rest of the FTE in the department is in the program services section of the budget is where that is. Then you'll see that the Arts Commission is a small piece. The Tourism Commission is about $6 million. Film and Video about $1 million. The Progress Board about $1 million. And then this other large category, pass-through and debt service, is mainly, we'll get to it in a minute, but this is mainly commitments made by prior legislatures particularly last session, Senate Bill 710, which provided advanced funding for deepening the Columbia River Channel and for several infrastructure projects in Southern Oregon. So that's what that is. Okay, the next page, on page 2, essentially slices the same pie, the $2 million pie, a different way, and shows you what the sources of funds are with that. And if I can kind of start in the upper right, and I'll go around clockwise, the new lottery allocation is the main, that's our main thing that pays for our staff and I guess I would say infuses our programs with new resources. And that's kind of discretionary money that the legislature, the scarce resource that the legislature is allocating. That's about 21% of the total. That leverages a lot of the rest of the budget.
I was just asking staff for a question on your carryover lottery funds that has $10 million. Those are carried forward funds, but they're already pre-committed for.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Essentially, those will almost all be infrastructure projects. Some of it may be strategic reserve business development projects. That where, for instance, we'll make an award to a community to help subsidize a sewer system, but they don't need the money, you know, right away. There's a lot, and they do construction draws as they go along, and this is the amount that we're estimated will be at the end of the biennium that will be committed, but we won't, the money won't be out the door yet.
Okay.
So that's, and essentially 100% of that 10-9 is in that category. The lottery-backed bond proceeds is the new big source in our budget this time. We had a small amount in this category last time to match some federal funds, and the lottery-backed bond, $55 million, essentially paid for all our program option packages. So the increases in this budget are basically all proposed to be funded through bonds that would be issued against future lottery revenues of the state, and those basically pay for two things. One is infrastructure or port facilities or community facilities projects that are owned by local governments, and the other is the deepening of the Columbia River Channel.
So the Columbia River Channel project is just bonded indebtedness for, what, $17
million? In the governor's budget, there's only 10, but as you know, they now have got the final estimates, and there's an extra 7.7 million that's going to be required for that project, and that amount is authorized in the bond authorization bill, which passed out of Commerce, and I think is coming to Ways and Means.
Where is the money allocated, or where is it show up for the money that was allocated last session on the $7 million or $10 million or whatever we allocated on the dredging project then? Where are those funds listed under?
The source would be part of the new lottery allocation.
New lottery allocation?
Yes.
So it would be part of the $66 million?
Yes.
And that would be to pay the bond indebtedness of where those lotteries got bonds?
It's money that it will go into our Marine Navigation Improvement Fund, and we would disperse it to the Corps of Engineers, I guess, as it's required.
Okay.
The general fund appropriation, as you can see, is now only 1% of our budget. The only general fund we have at this point is the Oregon Progress Board and the Oregon Arts Commission. It's what that pays for. The federal sources of $80 million essentially is two things. One, two large pieces of that. One is the Community Development Block Grant from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. This is a consistent year in, year out appropriation. We administer the program for the non-metropolitan counties in Oregon. The other one is $27 million in Safe Drinking Water Act funds, which come from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. When you see it budgeted as expenditure, it will show up as other funds because the grant is made to the Health Division, and then we get it from the Health Division, put a transfer in from the Health Division. But from the point of view of where does the money come from on this sources diagram, it is federal money. And then I think there's about $10 million of limitation in here for a miscellaneous variety of grants that we've worked with, mainly disaster recovery and a variety of sources that are really related to the Northwest Economic Adjustment Initiative.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
Senator E. Mr. Scott, I want to know, why isn't the Safe Drinking Water Program be part of DEQ or Health Division? Why is it in here? After all, DEQ knows they analyze the quality of water. They know the Safe Drinking Water Standards. Why is it in this department?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, actually there's a collaboration among all three departments. So both Environmental Quality and the Health Division are involved in this grant. The Health Division doesn't do financing, basically, so they're like kind of contracting with us. I mean, they're the recipients of the grant. They're like contracting with us to manage that because we have expertise and capacity in this area. And I think they, in effect, because we have a larger critical mass of that and a better ability to package projects from a variety of sources, because that's what we do, that we can look at the lottery and the bonding and a variety of federal sources, and we're the agency that does that packaging. I think it was felt that we were the right ones to administer this program and that it would make it more efficient because we could do a better job of making sure that we use this money where it was on those projects that could use it best, and we could combine it with other sources because we have our hands on all those.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
I just feel that they know, or they analyze the water. They know the quality of water, whether it is deficient or not in meeting safe drinking standards. Then how do you review the application to make sure that application really is eligible for meeting safe water standards?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, there's an advisory committee for the Safe Drinking Water Act Revolving Loans Fund. That advisory committee is actually staffed by the Health Division, and our department and the Department of Environmental Quality are represented on it, as well as local governments and Health Division officials. And we work from a list of projects, and the Health Division actually does the qualifying of the project in terms of their eligibility and their priority. And what we do is really do the financing end of that.
I just wonder whether it's a duplication of efforts. You know, it could be more efficiently than in DEQ or in Health. That's my question.
Well, the point is, I think Mr.
I know he said they have an advisory committee.
Yeah, but the point he's trying to make is that they're more or less the banking operation that sets up the financing. The Health Division is the one who does the actual screening to determine qualifications if it achieves Clean Water Act requirements, as I understood Mr. Scott to say. Is that correct, Mr. Scott?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And I guess, Mr. Chairman, I also point out that I think that the three agencies got together when we knew this money was going to be available, and everybody wanted us to do it because they thought that would be the most efficient way to handle the money. We presented that to the 1997, Ways and Means Committee. That was the way it was adopted. And then there's actually an authorizing bill, Senate Bill 403, that has passed both houses in this session that establishes the Safe Drinking Water Fund in our department.
Okay. You want to continue? Representative Starr? Oh, okay. If you want to continue, please.
We just talked about federal sources. The other sources, and to some extent the distinction between limited and non-limited is a little arbitrary, but essentially the sources of money in both categories is primarily the proceeds of new revenue bonds that are sold on behalf of Oregon communities is the biggest one. The second source is the cash flow that recycles back into our various revolving loan funds from loans that have been made in the past, and that money recycles back in. And then the third significant source is treasury interest, where we've got cash balances that earn interest. And the final source is where we sponsor some activity and other organizations contribute to it. That's not a big part of this, but for instance, the Tourism Commission publishes the Oregon Travel Guide. Most of that is paid for by advertising from other partners and our authority to spend the money that they contribute is part of the other funding. So those are basically where that money comes from. There's kind of a significant reduction, if you kind of looked at that bar graph earlier, I don't know if you noticed, there's a significant reduction in non-limited other funds. That's essentially because we concluded that we had way more authority than we needed, and so we adjusted it to reflect more closely, you know, to give you a better idea of how much money really flows through our hands in a biennium, because they had a lot of what we call empty limitation there that we would never use. So that's basically the sources of funds in our budget. Any other questions on that? Page 3 on the next page really puts together those two pie charts so that you can see on the left we've got the 7 line items in our budget, community development program, tourism, and so on. And then we show you both for the current biennium budget and for the recommended budget breakdown of sources within each of those programs. So that's just a reference piece if you ever get kind of curious about where that is. It's here. Okay, now page 4. We're focusing down now onto just the new lottery allocation portion of the budget and the lottery bond. So that's the summary that's on this page, and then we'll do a general fund in a minute. But those are the areas where you have, I think, the most influence on our budget. And so what this shows you, and many of you have seen this spreadsheet before, is that across the vertical columns, there are 5 of our line items. The other 2 are in the general fund. 5 of them that use lottery proceeds or lottery bond proceeds. Community development program services, tourism, pass-through, film and video. And then on the right is the agency total. And what this does is show you how we got from the last biennium's legislatively approved budget of $55,779,504 to the calculated current service level of $64,939,354, That is virtually all, except for, I guess I would say, elimination of one-time expenditures and addition of some inflation adjustment for cost of doing business factors. Really, the whole story is in the last three items there. The fund, the debt service on the lottery back bonds issued last, or issued this biennium, authorized last session. The $3.3 million that will be available in the new biennium for Columbia Channel deepening, and that's of a total of 10 that was pre-authorized by the last session, and then $5 million for a little bit of it for the Ports Revolving Loan Fund, and the balance is for kind of a begin down payment on the natural gas pipeline in Coos Bay and improvements at the Medford and Klamath Falls airports. And those were all authorized by the 1997 legislative session, so that's how they get in current service level.
Sure.
Further news.
Just curious, because it came up with something else. What did we do with the natural gas pipeline in Coos Bay? This was money to study it or begin something?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, the last legislative session authorized, I think, a total of $4 million that's not all in this biennium. It's over a longer period, I think, to subsidize a natural gas pipeline. I think at that time it wasn't known exactly how the money would be used. The way that's now budgeted, a good chunk of it, I think, will be used for feasibility and environmental impact assessments. And as I'm sure you've heard, there's another bill that's actually, I think, coming to this committee, the bond authorization bill, that's asking for an additional $20 million that would be actually to subsidize construction of the pipeline.
But we haven't begun the feasibility studies and the assessments of doing the project.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke said yes, that has begun, but in a very modest way at this point. There's some financial consultants that have been retained, and there's some initial scoping and structuring work, but there hasn't been any serious engineering or environmental assessment work done.
Safe to say we don't know if that pipeline can be laid in that particular location.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, I guess the right answer to that is yes, although I think most people have looked at it are of the belief that it will be feasible, but the exactly what will it will cost and what will have to be done in order to make it work is the big unknown at this point. I don't think there's serious doubt that imagine if anybody is anticipating that there's a real fatal objection to it other than the potential of a cost objection.
Is your office involved in the $20 million is the bill discussion in the $20 million estimate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, essentially no. We have worked with the local government people and the Northwest Natural Gas and their consultants around structuring ideas and how to make it work. We haven't really had any involvement in the cost estimate side of that.
Okay. Yes.
Senator Lynn.
How much was the amount that the federal government authorized for the channel deepening? And we have $10 million, but how much was it? I forgot. $17 million? I don't remember.
Let's see. $182 million. Basically, we're doing a match to the federal, and there's a match equal to ours from Washington State.
But will it be appropriate sometime this year, or how does it
work? I think it's in the current Congress that appropriation is working.
Authorization.
Okay. Authorization this session, appropriation next session.
Thank you.
Let me ask what happens to these funds? Say, like we set aside 2 years ago money for the forest to do the dredging. Are those interest bearing accounts, and where does the interest accrue to? Does it accrue to the project, or does it accrue to the department?
Mr. Chairman, there's differences. If you look on this sheet in front of us, the two items that are in the community development fund go into the marine, the $3.3 million goes in the Marine Navigation Improvement Fund, that's for the channel deepening, and the $335,000 goes in the Port Revolving Loan Fund. Those are department funds, and the interest accrues to the fund. We can't use it for anything else other than what it's been given to us for, but in the other two examples, the $4.665 million for the Southern Oregon Airport, I'm not sure I know the answer to the question, but I think we pass it through without holding it.
It actually doesn't define the Unified International Fund.
Okay.
That's
never mind. There's a new fund established called the Unified International Trade Fund that collects the money and the interest. And again, that's the interest as well as the corpus is dedicated to the specific project.
Okay. Cindy, did you say you had a question?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, is there a page for this Marine Navigation Columbia River Channel project? A narrative for the program.
Let's see. We would go to Community Development Fund, and in this book, the only there really isn't a narrative. No, there's only a summary. I believe in the other book that you have, the department budget. Oh, there's a program option package. Where is it? Okay, I'm sorry. If you go to the Community Development Fund green tab, and then the white tab behind it that says Program Option Packages, page 5 behind that tab, program description for that.
And the Program Option Packages, and what page?
Page 5, the last page.
Senator,
the $10 million that was approved for the channel deepening a couple of sessions ago or whenever we did that, it was bonds, right?
Chairman, Senator Dukes, no.
Lottery money?
That was a direct allocation. It was structured in such a way that it would be possible, I think, to sell bonds against that revenue stream, but it's not bonds. It's just.
But this is?
This is. This is supposed to be funded with bonds.
What happens if lawsuits push construction dredging back 5 years?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke, the way that House Bill 2153 is structured, which authorizes the bonds, I have to authorize the sale of the bond. I'm not allowed to do that until all the environmental approvals have been filed.
To follow up on that question, Senator Duke, if it's a protracted litigation and you don't sell the bonds, we're not generating any liability. Is that correct? In other words, the Corps of Engineers are not going to come in and start on something that is still litigation.
That's correct.
Okay, because I'd be concerned if one of the parties decided to proceed and everything wasn't finalized. So we would not actually sell the bonds until the deck was clear and everything was set to go. That's when you actually sell the bond.
That's correct.
Okay. Senator Lim?
Yes. Oh. Yes. Again, the same subject, channel deepening. Is that the 3/5 more than 4/6 we have, or how much, how deep we are going to channel?
40 to 43. Mr. Chairman, Senator Lynn, the answer is yes. We will have a presentation on this, but
okay.
But yes, it's essentially it's 3 feet deeper. Thank you. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, you are going to have a presentation on this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because it talks about $182 million needed for the project. So the state needs to put in $10 million?
Mr. Chairman, the total, Senator Yee, the total state contribution is now thought to be $27.7. This $10 million that's in the governor's recommended budget would only bring the state's commitment up to $20 million. The bond authorization bill that'll be coming to you has the extra $7.7 million in it as well. At the time the budget was prepared, we didn't really have a number, so we used $10 million.
I'll wait for detailed information presented.
All right. If you'd like to continue, Mr. Scott, and we have approximately about 7 minutes, and then we have to adjourn because of conversation.
Okay, well, let me just quiz you through the rest of these, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Fields. We were just talking about how we got to the current service level. You'll see that in terms of program option packages that would be funded by direct lottery as opposed to bonds, there are only two packages with money in them. One is the debt service on the new bonds to be issued. And in fact, this is only part of the debt service. There's another part that would be funded by the cash, the other funds, essentially. The $200,000 is to expand overseas activities in international trade. Then there are three unfunded positions in this category, two in international and one in tourism, where the governor didn't approve a funding for that, but did approve requesting the position authority, and we would absorb that within existing resources. Finally, there are four categories of program options for a total of $55 million of lottery bonds. And essentially, what those are, just briefly, and obviously we'll have presentations on all of these. The first is $5 million, and that's to match the federal safe drinking water grant that we talked about earlier. $20 million is to pay for, essentially to sustain the existing level of our funding for our infrastructure programs, Special Public Works, Water, Wastewater, Post Revolving Loan, etc. Doing that would also replace some current service level money for those programs, allowing us or the commission to divert that money so that we can restore the regional strategy program, now called regional investment, to the level it was at in 95-97. The third item here would be actually a $20 million increase in infrastructure and ports financing. And we'll have a presentation for you on the justification for that increase. That's an increase from existing levels. And the final is the $10 million we've just been talking about for the next page, just quickly, is the general fund. This gives you the same information about the general fund. There's a lot less zeros here. Essentially, what's in here in terms of changes is the Arts Commission loses as a one-time expenditure the at-risk youth initiative approved by the previous legislature. That's not in the governor's requested budget. And then there is one funded position for the progress report, progress board, two unfunded adjustments, essentially equity adjustments for the executive directors of the Arts and progress board, and finally $200,000 for a funding, continued funding for the cultural task force that's now in, I think it's House Bill 2005, which the Speaker introduced, and I think you'll be, I think you'll want to take this out of here and consider it when you consider that.
Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott, are you going to present anything on the arts?
Yes.
And youth and
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Will we get, I don't know what the cultural task force is. Will that come in later?
Yeah, you'll have a separate bill that covers this.
I didn't know this. Oh, okay.
There's a bill. I assume it'll be coming to your committee. It's been referred to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that bill went through the general government subcommittee.
Oh, okay.
The $200,000 subcommittee.
Never mind. All right. It's all the way around.
And it is out of this committee. It was through the floor of the House floor, and it will be coming to the Senate.
So I don't need to worry about it.
Never mind. All you have to do is take the $200,000 out of our budget.
Perfect.
And put it where? Take it out of here and put it where? Mr. Chair, Senator Dean, it is the funding for that $200,000 is in this budget, but it is not going to be handled through this action. It was handled through the bill. The appropriation is in the bill.
It stays in the
aid.
Because I thought you'd say take it out of
here. We will. That will be a technical adjustment.
Oh. Yeah. It will be. The money will be in our department, but through a different bill that I guess isn't in your subcommittee.
Okay.
Okay. So next page is just a recap of the program option packages. If you want a summary of that, and I think I'll stop there and let Kelly do what he
does. Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Kelly Fields with the Department of Administrative Services, and Jamie's going to hand out my presentation documents that look very much similar to all the other presentation documents we've been giving you throughout this session. Given the time, let me just hit the highlights of the government's budget. I think Bill's already done a very good job of laying those out. Looking on page one, again, the same number that Bill's been talking about in total funds, a little over $322 million program, 141 FTE. This is a reduction, as Bill's noted from the 97-99 legislative approved budget, but as he stated, most of it is artificial. There are accounting changes in other funds, or the non-limited other funds, which make up the bulk of the major changes. There are also some one-time expenditures that have been taken out of both lottery funds and general funds that were authorized by the 97 session. Probably the biggest policy issue in this budget is the $55 million of lottery-backed bond proceeds. As Bill stated, $5 million of it is for the state drinking water match. There's another $40 is for community infrastructure and $10 million for the Columbia River dredging, which he'll talk about a little bit more. And also, as Bill noticed and mentioned, the plan is to take $10 million out of the base budget in order to fully finance the Regional Strategies Program, or as it's called, the new Regional Investment Fund, so that we have more commitment out to the community. So that pretty much describes the highlights of the governor's budget. If you move to page two.
Mr. Chairman, before we move to page two, tell me, why does the summary RFO presented for us shows 97-99 estimated budget at $210 million approximately, and you show $347 million.
Mr. Chair.
What is the difference?
I've been in human resources too long, Mr. Chair. I'm going to call you Madam Chair. I knew I was going to do that.
I've been called a lot worse.
Well, thank you. Senator G. My column represents the 97-99 budget that was approved by the legislature. What the agency has done is relooked at what their actual expenditures are going to be this biennium, and they are lower. And that's the estimated column that you have in the legislative fiscal presentation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a large portion of that, again, is the adjustment in the non-limited expenditures.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, if you look at the carryover resources, we are saying it's about $34 million of carryforward resources in the legislative approved budget. And if you look at the legislative fiscal display, and I don't have it here, but I think it's around $7
million. Mm-hmm.
So that is the largest difference between those two. The agency, when they ended last biennium, anticipated more projects needing to be completed and paid for during this biennium, during 97-99. In actual fact, more of those projects got done earlier, so they didn't need that amount of carry-forward resources.
So you have, follow-up question.
Yes.
So you have $27 million more in carryover.
We have $27 million more in empty limitation than when we actually need it. We, Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, at the end of last biennium, the department thought that they would need $34 million to fully finance all the projects they'd committed to. In actual fact, they only needed about $7 million of resources. The projects finished faster than what they'd anticipated.
Finished less than anticipated?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I can't answer that question. I believe the answer is no. It's just that they were finished faster.
Anyway, it shows $27 million more in carryover.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, when you say $27 million more in carryover, I'm not looking at the same, are you looking at the same display I am?
I'm looking at your chart that shows $34.4 million.
Right.
And I'm looking at both charts, lottery carryover under 97-99. It shows $7
million. Right.
So...
Yes. At the end of last biennium, we thought we were going to need $34 million in carryover. In actual fact, we only needed $7
million. The question is, you have $27 million more in carryover in lottery funds.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, no, we don't have any more money as a result of this. Essentially, it's empty limitation. It's authority you gave us that we did not need.
Oh, okay.
No money.
Limitation you didn't use.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, correct.
I see. Okay. If I have more questions, I'll
be happy to.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler.
Just one brief question. The total for the current service level, Department of Administrative Service budget, recommended budget, and the governor's recommended budget. The governor's revised is $322,093,000, and the charts that we've looked at under the program, the governor's budget show $322,000,008.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, if you look on the back page, that's page 4 of the document, you can see the $322.8 million was the governor's, we say, printed budget,
right.
And then the governor required to reduce this budget slightly in order to balance based on new revenue forecasts. So we made some minor adjustments to get down to the $322.093 million.
So the graphs of $322.8 million, Mr. Chair, are not accurate at this time.
Mr. Chair.
093, correct.
Yeah, that's correct. We made these changes very late in the process and did not require the department to redo all their graphs and charts based on these last-minute changes.
Thank you.
May I add something, too?
Mr. Lamont?
For the purposes of tracking what it is that we end up doing, we work from the governor's printed budget. We will make these adjustments, these reductions that are the governor's revision as we walk through. They'll be part of my recommendations to you, and that will become the starting point from which we make any other adjustments.
Thank you very much,
Ron.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm moving to page 2, and in the interest of time,
I have laid out the building blocks we used to develop the governor's recommended budget. These are no different than what she has heard from every other agency. We follow the same process. We follow the same procedures. So with that, unless there are questions, let me move to page 3 that identifies the 12 policy packages that are contained in this budget. Let me very quickly go through those. Package 010 does add resources for overseas trade missions, and it also does self-finance 2 staff to expand some of the services in this program. And I think Commissioner Bill Williams talked to you more directly about that when the overview was mentioned about the critical need in this particular area, and we'll talk more about that when we get to the international division. Package 103 is essentially a housekeeping package. The department had originally about 6 regional development officers and people that are out in the field. It cobbled together classifications so they could actually have 12 people out in the field. This is a cleanup to get all those positions with the same classification so they're doing the same work. Package 105 adds 1 position as they increase their need for resources because of more infrastructure financing. They need the staff to do some of the technical assistance, project management, and financial assistance. So this is a workload-related position. Yeah, it's tied to package 203 further down. If you chose not to finance that package, then they wouldn't need this position. Bill talked about the package 201, 202, 203, and 204. The sum of those is the $55 million, $5 million to safe drinking water, $20 million to maintain the existing infrastructure projects, 203 to expand, and the Columbia River dredging. And the bottom package on the page, 441, is a package that's going to be financed within the tourism partners. They were successful in targeting some high-end tourism in the European area. They want to do the same thing in the Asian area. And we'll talk a little bit more about that at that time. I'm moving to page 4. If there aren't any questions, the final packages. We are requesting in package 462 to reclass the Arts Commission director to reflect the duties that this person has. This is self-financed. 464, we've already talked about that. That's House Bill 2005. It's already in process, so I won't talk about that anymore. 471 is, again, another reclass for Jeff Tryon based on his duties. Again, as a position that was cobbled together within existing resources based on his duties, the classification he'd be added, so the agency will self-finance that. And finally, package 550 is essentially debt financing. If you choose to finance this budget with lottery-backed bonds of $55 million, this would be the debt service you would need to, in order to financing it, given it the level and also the timing that's anticipated in the governor's budget. And then finally, we did make some small revisions to the budget based on changes in revenue, and those are highlighted at the end. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer the questions either today or tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions by committee members? As we get into more specifics, I'm sure there'll be a lot more. Okay. If there's no other issues before the committee, we are going to meet hopefully this tomorrow morning after the full committee and continue on with this presentation. We might indicate to the members again we're on an awfully tight schedule, and when we have to wait for 25 or 30 minutes each morning for a form to show up, it creates a very hardship. So we're trying to move ahead, and I would encourage the members to be here.
Also, a reminder that you have scheduled 41, I believe it is, that you...
For Friday morning as well.
For Friday morning work session as well.
That's the unemployment bill. So if there's no other business to come before the committee, we are adjourned until 8 a.m. or following full wage moves in the morning.
Is it a good time?